Item 12.
Point Rick.
07-16-98.
I need help because I'm electronically.
There you go. Just go ahead. You're on.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
This is SE Ventures 07-1968, request applicant back authorization to retain one 117-foot-long and two 65-foot-long hex-shaped concrete breakwater boxes positioned approximately 65 to 80-foot channelward of mean low water and to install approximately 1,080 cubic yards of beach-quality sand material adjacent to the property at Eagle Bay, situated along the Potomac River in King George County. This is the map, topo map showing the area right here in red. This is Fairview Beach, and this is Potomac Creek up this way. Fairview Beach is about 2.5 miles away. This is a site situation here. Eagle Bay subdivision is an undeveloped residential subdivision approximately 2.5 miles east of Fairview Beach. And like I stated, east of Potomac Creek. The Eagle Bay property shoreline, which is approximately 1,500 feet in length with a slope bank down to a narrow beach with no forested buffer. It has unobstructed fetch of approximately 10 miles to the north-northwest and 12 miles to the north-northeast. The shoreline of the property downstream of Eagle Bay is undeveloped and forested to the edge of the beach with cliffs of approximately 20 to 30 feet in height with showing of some upland erosion issues, and the upstream property is developed with no forested buffer to the shoreline. And I'll show you that right here. This is basically the area upstream, downstream, which is the cliffs, 20, 30-foot cliffs right here. And like I said, this property in here is all developed down here with a hardened shoreline. On July 3rd, 2007, during a site inspection at Eagle Harbor on Potomac, it was noted that there were hex-shaped concrete breakwater boxes installed approximately 100 foot from shore. BMRCO 41017 authorized the use of steel-reinforced concrete sea box, which has a different footprint than the hex boxes. Okay, a little background here. Okay, in BMRCO 41017, no permit necessary letter was issued for an installation of six 120-foot breakwater boxes. Four of the breakwater boxes were to be installed downstream of an L-head pier, and two were supposed to be installed upstream of the L-head pier. The four downriver breakwater boxes were installed in January 2005 and utilized rectangular-type concrete boxes. These four boxes were installed at the time where BMRC did not take jurisdiction on the Potomac River, as Jeff was talking about. The first of the 117-foot hex breakwater boxes was installed in December 2006, and in June of 2007, the final breakwater boxes were installed. And they were split into two 65-foot breakwaters due to the depth and of the water topography of the river bottom. And again, it's going to show you, these are the hex boxes right here, starting from, here's the L-shape here. These are the breakwater boxes, the hex breakwater box, the square rectangle breakwater boxes that were installed prior to the jurisdictional changeover. And these were the breakwaters, the hex breakwater boxes that were installed after the changeover. And this shows right here where the violation is. It shows the 117-foot break box and the two 65-foot breakwaters, hex-shaped breakwater boxes. Okay, here's the drawing that came in 2004 for the installation of the breakwater boxes. It shows the four 100-foot breakwaters right here that were installed prior to jurisdictional change. The L-shape here would be right in this vicinity here. And this showed that they were going to put two 120-foot square rectangular breakwater boxes in that position. And this shows approximately the two breakwater on the upriver side of the L-shaped pier, which is right here. And this would have been 120 foot, and they were of the square rectangular type. This shows a picture of the wharf slash breakwater that was made out of breakwater boxes on one of the downriver sides. And this right here shows the breakwater drawings from the 2004 application showing the four downriver breakwater boxes. It didn't show the two upriver ones. Okay, and right here again just shows the ones that were that were installed prior to jurisdictional change. And this is a ground view showing also those ones that were installed prior to jurisdictional change. This is the design and the overview shot of the after the fact application for the installation of for the retaining of the 117 foot and 265 foot breakwater boxes. This shows the design, basically the same as what Jeff had prior to this. This shows the design also. And this was the beach nourishment that he's requesting to put behind the two breakwater boxes, the after-fact breakwater boxes. This is not done yet. He's asking it with the permit itself. This shows a picture of the hex breakwater boxes installed. This is the 117 foot box, breakwater box right here. And the next picture shows that was this shows the breakwater, the 117 foot breakwater box, and the 265s right here. Had they installed the rectangular boxes as requested by the 2004 permit in this position, and these two weren't split and put in the right position as per that drawing, this would not be in front of you today. But since they were split up and they weren't using the original, what they asked for was the square breakwater boxes. That's the reason we're looking for, because they installed these right here. The BIMS report states that since they don't recommend the breakwater boxes, since the site already has three different types of shore protection on it. It has retention walls, the groins, and the breakwaters. In Julie's report on there, it talks about how these areas right here are already showing scour from the wave action, and you can actually see the scour down there. And their concern at BIMS is that these are going to show the same scour because of the wave reflection of a flat surface coming underneath and causing the scour to happen in front of these boxes. And again, this shows the picture of the whole site itself, showing the prior to jurisdictional changeover and the after fact. These are the ones we're looking at again. In summary, the unauthorized or unpermitted installation of the 117-foot and 265-foot hex box breakwater boxes adjacent to Eagle Bay is a result of SC Ventures' decision to substitute the rectangular C-box structures he applied to install with a hex-type breakwater box design without the necessary prior approval or request to modify the original project through the standard joint permit application and public interest review process. The work was also initiated and completed in 2007, nearly 2 years after Virginia assumed regulatory authority to permit structures in the Potomac River. Although their benefit may be limited, as demonstrated by the conditions at the site, removal may be more problematic than allowing them to remain. Accordingly, and given to the intervening change in jurisdiction along the Potomac shoreline, staff recommends approval of the after-the-fact request to retain 117-foot long and 265-foot long fiberglass reinforced concrete hex-shaped breakwater boxes, extending approximately 100-foot channelward of mean low water, but to deny the backfill of approximately 1,080 cubic yards of beach quality sand material adjacent to the property at Eagle Bay. This recommendation for denial is based on the presence of the existing seawall and groins that already act to hold the sand along the shoreline, creating a small beach area. In addition, if approved, staff recommends the assessment of a triple permit fee and a civil charge of $1,800 based on minimal environmental impact and a major degree of deviation or noncompliance associated with the project. Staff also recommends that the permittee be required to remove and replace any broken breakwater boxes within 30 days of receiving notice from the commission. If a different type of breakwater box is desired to be utilized in the future, a joint permit application must be submitted for staff review and commission approval.
Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
To get this straight now, had they used the rectangular boxes that they originally said and not broken those, you would consider them to be in compliance?
If these right here would have been rectangular boxes, and this would have been 120-foot long, not split in half, rectangular boxes, that would have been within compliance. Yes, sir.
Okay. And a follow-up question. It says in the write-up here, the no permit needed letter, does it have an expiration date on it, or they're claiming it doesn't expire?
As counsel has indicated in prior hearings, the no permit necessary letter is basically a statement of the existing jurisdiction at that point in time, whether that's location of the mean low watermark or whatever else, and that with a subsequent change, in this case in state law, much like a change in zoning, you know, the new project comes underneath, you know, the existing law at the time. Now, had we issued a permit, not an NPN, there is some argument that they would have been vested in the fact that they had the authorization, they were proceeding within the 3 years given with the permit, and we probably would not have said anything because they had a document. In this case, they had a no permit necessary letter, which essentially ceased to be valid on July 1st, when in fact the law changed and the work was undertaken two years after the law changed.
Okay, so, but they applied for a permit and you told them they didn't need one, and now we're saying they didn't.
Correct.
They had to come back and get one. Okay.
The owner of the property, which is Warren and Ed Veazey, and the owner of the company itself that installs these are owned by Warren and Ed Veazey. Warren and Ed Veazey also had other permits along the Potomac River since the jurisdictional changeover in 2005. So I would think that he would be more than aware of the jurisdictional change at that time.
Any other questions? Thank you. Is the applicant here a representative? I've already sworn you in, so just give me your name.
Warren Veazey. I'm an engineer. I'll try to delve gently into lawyerism. As you said, I had a no permit required. I shouldn't say I. My father put in this permit. No permit required from you all. I did get one, or we did get one, from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We installed the first four breakwaters as shown in March of 07. We put in an extension for the permit since we hadn't done these two yet. It must have been earlier. They sent back a letter saying, no problem, we've extended your permit until 2008. No notice on there that, oh, by the way, you need to get a permit from VMRC now. And probably the 10 permits that I've gotten, probably more than that since the jurisdictional change, which, yes, I'm fully aware of, it was never mentioned to me that, oh, by the way, the permits you had beforehand, you now have to come back. So you all never approached me and said, the old permits you have are no longer valid. Even the Corps of Engineers didn't bother to mention that to me. So, and you all never mentioned it to me. So I don't really see how I have broken or not followed your permit just because you have jurisdiction. Now, these were simply grandfathered. You never said anything about it. I went through the standard channels with the Army Corps of Engineers. They approved it. They also approved the splitting of the breakwaters, and I have a letter here saying no problem with the splitting of the breakwater. So we continued and operated perfectly through the permits we had. You all never informed us otherwise in any fashion. That, oh, by the way, I knew you have jurisdiction now. You never came to me and said you have to go back to your old permits and redo them. That's common sense grandfathering. You change a law, you don't throw out the old law, the old effects that it's had in the past. So that's how we've simply been operating on. Yes, these are to my knowledge, besides Stratford Harbor, the only three permits that would be under effect in this. That, you know, we had a permit before the July 1st switch. So I don't see this cropping up again. But we were operating our permit. We got permission to split these from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Nobody ever mentioned, oh, by the way, you now have to go back through It simply was grandfathered. We didn't see a reason, just like in the White Sands Harbor. There's an existing permit. You all never came back to us and said, oh, by the way, now you got to go back. And I've been dealing with the same VMRC agents for years. Even at Stratford Harbor, they said, when I put in for it, and White Sands Harbor, both of them were put in months before the change. Nothing. It was never mentioned, oh, by the way. It was actually specifically mentioned by Ben McGinnis for the Stratford Harbor breakwaters in Westmoreland County. Had you put these in July 1st, you would need to get a permit from us, but since they're in May or whatever month it was, you don't need one from us. Not come after that, you're going to have to apply again over. So, no, that's why we proceeded through common sense rules that these are grandfathered, and we perfectly proceeded as we're supposed to get a grant to get extended and get permission to split these. So I don't see any reason to say that this is a violation at all, especially when there's you all never sent anything to us saying, by the way, you have to switch. As far as the beach nourishment, I find it very peculiar that VIMS will say now they don't recommend it, where in 2004, for this permit, for this project, they recommend beach nourishment. Why is the switch? Exactly the same. This permit, this project with this, the only difference is the 120 broken into 265s. Then that project, they recommend beach nourishment. And now today, suddenly they've changed. Why? You can see in here, some of these breakwaters are groins. I'm actually shortening behind the first 120-foot hex breakwater. The two groins there I've cut in half, and I plan on pulling the groins out as the beach nourishment goes in. I don't need them there. I'll just need the groins at the end of the breakwater structure. But the whole point of a breakwater is to collect sand behind it and to mitigate, i.e. my own family, I live just around the corner, is to put beach nourishment down there. So I don't see at all their reasoning for disallowing beach nourishment. Just upriver at Fairview Beach, we're going through a rock breakwater, and we're trying to put in hex boxes, and they went through over and over, and they made them wait 2 years until they finally agreed to put beach nourishment in their breakwater project. So why the change against us? I don't understand that. And then final, I guess as an aside, just to let you know, number-wise, White Sands Harbor originally had $800,000 to put their rock in. We charged $250,000. Even with these repairs, we're under $300,000. So they're not being taken for a ride. I'm doing everything at cost of material. I'm losing money on everything I do here, but I'm doing the right thing, and we're maintaining a breakwater, and that's what you're supposed to do with a permit. You're supposed to maintain it. So we're really feeling harassed here. We were told to stop wave reflection on a vertical structure so it come up with a hex box. It's proven. It's been tested. That's how the rest of the world makes them. But things move very slowly in Virginia, it seems, as far as, I don't know, catching up on the times on how things are designed. We're just blessed with cheap rock until recently. Now things are changing. I'm on the forefront of that and getting beat up for it. So that's all I have to say.
Any questions? Hold on. Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Matters before the commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. Could we hear from VIMS on the beach nourishment issue?
Mr. Robbins, regarding the beach nourishment at this specific site, I believe Julie Bradshaw had originally recommended that this site be nourished, as we typically will recommend that any breakwater project be associated with beach nourishment. That helps to alleviate any sort of downdrift effects of these types of structures trapping sand and then consequently that sand not being able to pass through a literal drift downstream. This site is somewhat complicated by the fact that there's a multitude of shoreline erosion control structures presently being employed, such as the vertical concrete bulkhead, the groins. Up until a few minutes ago, I think we were unaware that Mr. Vizi had intended to pull the groins out as beach nourishment went in. I do want to clarify, I'm not sure it was Ms. Bradshaw's recommendation that the beach nourishment be denied, but your staff's recommendation. So in this situation, I think we would like to see how well these hex boxes perform I don't necessarily agree with Mr. Vesey that these are proven, but this certainly affords us an opportunity to see whether or not that is in fact the will be the case. We also recommended that should these boxes be approved, that some type of a monitoring plan be developed so that we can attest, or Mr. Vesey can attest to, whether or not they actually are performing as designed. It would be, I think, a disservice to all involved if we continue to have to replace broken boxes, whether of the original rectangular design, the new hex box design. I think a monitoring plan will help to answer some of those questions just as to how effectively they do accrete sand behind them and just how well the structures remain in place.
Is a monitoring plan something that VIMS is prepared to execute and develop, or is that something
we would not execute it. We would provide guidance to your staff in developing language. In fact, there is a project that we most recently have worked with your staff on to develop some guidelines in which the applicant and Mr. Vesey could conduct it's more of survey related, elevations taken, a number of transects in association with where the breakwaters are situated, and that way you get an idea over time whether or not actually sand is accreting behind the structures, are the structures remaining in place, or are they shifting and moving around. So that would be something that we would certainly recommend in this case as well.
Thank you. Just a follow-up question for our staff. Is that something that could be done through normal compliance inspections? In other words, is that within the range of the permit?
It's within the range of the permit, and that as a condition of approval in prior permits, you have required the applicant to agree to that monitoring to determine the effectiveness of these types of structures. So those protocols, I mean, we could pull those out of the previous commission approvals, and they're available.
But it's already being done, isn't it, the monitoring? So
no, they agreed to it, but they opted not to do it on that one particular project.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Any other questions? Okay. The manager reports.
Thank you. Well, given the testimony that I've heard, it seems to me that I would like to move that we permit and give an after-the-fact permit to this proposal, and that we allow him to nourish the beach if he, in fact, takes out the growens, and to not assess any fees or civil charges. And also, as Mr. Robbins mentioned, to encourage or
allow
there to be monitoring on the site.
Okay. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Conahay. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Okay. Item 13, arsenal planting ground applications, Object Bay.
Yeah, it's a pretty long description.
Go ahead.
But it's a pretty involved project. Yeah. But I'll try to go through it pretty quickly.
I appreciate it.
End of the day.
End of the day.
And I'm lucky to be the last habitat case. There are four.